So Psalms chapter 13 kind of goes along with what David has been doing. It's a psalm of lament. It's a psalm of a cry out to God for mercy and help. So as we read through this, you might be able to identify with a certain portion of your life or maybe where you're at right now, what David is expressing in this psalm, because it's a pretty heart-wrenching what he is expressing, and we'll kind of talk about what that looks like in our lives and how we should respond in similar situations. Verse 1, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart all the day? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, my God. Enlighten my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my adversaries will rejoice when I am shaken. But I have trusted in your loving kindness. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, because he has dealt bountifully with me. So that's David's heartfelt cry of being in torment, in oppression and persecution. It's thought that this was probably written during the time when David was being pursued by Saul. You remember when David killed Goliath, Saul was kind of made to look a little foolish because the people of Israel were singing, Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And it didn't really go over good for the ego of a king to have a little shepherd boy being praised over you like that. And several other things. Saul tried to basically have him killed by putting him over this little small rinky-dink group of soldiers and telling them to go off into this really tough fight that's way over their heads and thinking, okay, that'll get rid of him. But he didn't. Told him that he could have his daughter as a wife if he would just go kill 100 Philistines and bring the foreskins to him. Well, he killed 200. Still, there's David. So Saul just had enough and he just starts trying to kill him outright. Throws a spear at him while David is there playing his harp, trying to soothe the king. Throws a spear at him, sticks it in the wall. And David takes out for the woods. And basically, we don't know exactly what that time frame is when David was running from Saul. But I'm looking at it, there were people that said anywhere from a year to the better part of 15 years. He was on the run from Saul. So you can see David, who has already been anointed as king. Because Samuel anoints David as king over Israel while Saul is still king. Because Saul has been messing up and he's been disobeying God and kind of thinking he's the man. And God said, okay, the blessing comes off of you and it's going on to David. But it was at least 20 years from the time David was anointed as king by Samuel the prophet until he was actually coronated as king. So that's a long stretch of time, 2 decades, you're waiting on something that God said's yours, but you're not seeing it. In the meantime, you're on the run for your life. You're thinking, well, Lord, this is a strange way for a king to act, running and hiding in caves and hiding out with, you know, a bunch of ruffians trying to survive. So during this time, David asks 4 different times in this short 6 verses, how long, O Lord? If it was a, you know, 5-10 years of being on the run, you can imagine after a while you're thinking, good grief, how long is this going to keep on? So David has this question for God, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? And at this point, punctuation is kind of important. Because, well, for example, you can say, let's eat, Grandma. Or you can say, let's eat, Grandma. there's a comma in there that makes a big difference. Or you could say, a woman without her man is nothing. Or you can say, a woman without her man is nothing. Punctuation makes a big difference. And that's what is important about that first verse. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Or, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? So instead of a question, it's a statement. So I think it's good for us to recognize the heart attitude of David is one of absolute submission to God, but at the same time, having a lot of question marks. Lord, will you hide your face from me forever? How long shall I take counsel in my soul? How long do I have to keep putting up and encouraging myself, because my circumstances certainly are not? How long do I have to keep the faith before I see something turn around? And many times we can get very disillusioned by the fact that difficulties just seem to keep mounting. They just keep coming. The hits keep coming. How long will my enemy be exalted over me? And this is a common theme in David's Psalms as well. You know, it seems like the people that are doing everything the wrong way, it seems like they're having a pretty good time. Seems like they're getting along just fine, and I'm here trying to serve you and suffering for it. But as we come to the end, he says, but I have trusted in your loving kindness. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. So there's that balance that David strikes. These are my adversities. They are plenty. They're everywhere. They're constantly surrounding me. But here is my confidence in the Lord. Here is my joyful submission to Him. And he's saying these things are counterbalances for me. Because really and truly, a lot of people have that health and wealth, prosperity gospel idea that God is blessing me, so I'll serve Him. But if you think about it, does God's quote-unquote blessing equal His faithfulness? Is God faithful when our circumstances are bad? Yeah. It might not be what we wanted. It might be the exact opposite of what we had hoped for. But God's faithfulness is still there. We have to be careful that we don't tie God's faithfulness to Him doing what we want Him to do. Because we can't determine the outcome of our adversities. We have no idea what our future ability to help other people will be as a result of the adversity we're going through now. Our immediate reaction, and it's just a human condition, when we experience pain and trial and discomfort, whatever it is, our first reaction is, let's make that stop. And I'll tell you, I'm very glad for the advancements in modern medicine that can make the pain stop physically. But some of the things that they've found to make the pain stop just bring another kind of pain. They just defer the pain later. So, is it a blessing? I think so. But I think it comes with its own curses. So we have to be careful that we are not so overwhelmed by our adversities that we begin to doubt and resent God. Because God is faithful regardless of our circumstances. God is not a genie that we can just rub the bottle And he pops out and says, what do you want me to do for you today? That's not who he is. He is the creator of the universe. And you think throughout history, how many people have served God and been persecuted mercilessly for that? That's going on today. But think about how true the testimony of the disciples rings. When you have 12 men or 11 men who were absolute witnesses of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and they all except John died horrific deaths, and all they said had to do was say, no, I was just kidding. That didn't really happen. How true does the resurrection of Christ ring when his disciples were willing to be crucified themselves, killed in horrible ways, when all they had to do was say is a lie? Would you die for a lie? No, I don't think so. So David in this psalm is expressing the absolute despair that is in conflict with the hope that he feels in God's ability to sustain him. Now, if David had quit, gave up, said, God, it's been 10 years, that's long enough. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to head out on my own. This whole king thing isn't working out. I think it was all just a show. I think Samuel drank too much that night. I'm going out and doing what I want to do. He never would have become king. He never would have been the one who was in line to be the ancestor of Christ. So we have to be careful that we don't become so disillusioned by the seemingly unending difficulties of life that we short circuit God's plan and short ourselves from what God intended to bless us with. Because even if our circumstances are horrible for the duration of our life, how great are the rewards in heaven for the people who don't see rewards on earth? That's what Christ said about the Pharisees. Look, they stand on the corner and they have somebody blow the trumpet before they give their offering. They have their reward right there. That's all they've got. If they're performing their religious ceremonies for the applause of men, good job, that's all you get. But when you have endured suffering and hardship for an extended period of time, you find in eternity it was all worth it. So you have an eternity's worth of joy for a pain. Compare eternity with what we experience here on earth. It's nothing. Our trials and sufferings here on earth cannot be compared to the glory that will be revealed. That's what Paul says. This light suffering, Paul calls it. Okay, Paul's been shipwrecked and stoned and hunted and left for dead, and he's saying, ain't no big deal. I know where I'm going. And that's what's really cool when you think about the Apostle Paul. Why was he able to do so much? Why was he able to be so powerful in the presentation of the gospel, in the pursuit, in regardless of opposition, of the goal of the kingdom? Well, think about what he saw. In Galatians, Paul talks about he was taken into heaven. He didn't know even if it was in the body or out of the body. But he saw things that the human mouth can't even describe. And in that experience, it allowed him to see all of the stuff of this life as, that's nothing. You got all of this stuff, all that gold and silver and all that possessions. I've seen what a real mansion looks like. And that's nothing. So we have to have that kind of perspective when we're dealing with the adversities of life. He ends with, I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. David, if this truly was written during that time when David is running from Saul, he's hiding in caves. He's dependent on handouts to survive. And he's saying, God has dealt bountifully with me. So David's estimation of God's faithfulness is not tied to his circumstances. And that's a distinction that we really need to be careful to mark very carefully. That God is faithful. My circumstances might be terrible, but that has no impact on God's faithfulness. Because God is faithful, that he will reward those who serve him. It might not be in this life, even. I think there are great rewards for serving God in this life, personally. But at the end of the day, even if I don't see any of those great rewards here on earth, is it worth it? I hope that we have that eternal perspective when we encounter the trials of life. Because if we're not careful, we're going to be disillusioned and we're going to say, well, I'm going to get mine here on earth and I'll just wait to see what happens in eternity. I'm afraid that's going to be an eternity if I wish it, I would have. Because the judgment seat of Christ in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul talks about there being rewards and loss of rewards in eternity. So that tells me that there's going to be some people who get rewards and some people who don't get rewards. And there's going to be some people who are worshiping God to the nth degree, and there are some people that are just glad to be there. And I feel sorry for the people that truly think, I'm just glad I'm going to be there. As long as I'm there, if I'm on, you know, a shack on the edge of town, that's fine with me. Well, that's great to say right now, but the very purpose we were created is to worship God and to spend eternity not being able to worship God because you don't have the rewards given to you because you spent your life on yourself on earth. You have to spend eternity worshiping God with a little pinky ring instead of crowns you can throw at his feet. I think that's a vast difference in perspective that is very, very helpful for us to understand that God's faithfulness is much more than our comfort, our circumstances. And one last thing, and I mentioned this before, that I think is good to remember. I am convinced that Satan can bless you. Satan can give you all of the blessings, quote unquote, of this life and distract you from what's important about the next life. So we have to be careful that we don't think that because I've got stuff and because I'm comfortable and because things are going well that I must be pleasing God. That's not a one-to-one correlation. God can bless us, but Satan can distract us just as easy as God can bless us. Maybe easier. So keeping our eyes focused on what's truly important, that's what's eternal, is what's truly important, allows us to see the difficulties and the trials and the persecutions of life not as a deal breaker, but as an eternity.